Good evening, welcome, good morning, good afternoon, however you want to greet the day. Thank you very much. It's time for the last three guys to do a podcast, our seventh episode here, and I have always John Morgo along with
Leon Brown.
Thank you very much for joining us. Again, we're going to talk a lot of college football. We're going to talk a lot of pro football as a lot of things are starting to happen. I think we're just about halfway through the college football schedule, if you can believe that. Just seemed like last month, actually it was last month, we were discussing how things were going to transpire. Now we're halfway home. College basketball is starting to ramp up. Pro basketball is ramping up. NHL, they dropped the puck on their regular season a few days ago. We'll get into all that. We'll start, of course, as we always do, looking at what's going on in the world of college football. Not much has happened. A lot of teams have won, teams that were expected to win. We got a couple of upsets we want to talk about. Probably the big one, LSU and Florida. It was in the swamp. LSU loses to Florida, fifth ranked, 27-19 to the 22nd ranked Gators. Now LSU has kind of dropped out from the ranks of the unbeaten. So basically my question to both of you guys is, whoever wants to take it first, is this Alabama's title to win now that LSU has kind of dropped off?
Yes. Me and Leon talked about this as we were getting ready for the show, as we were way back. And for me, I honestly thought that for the entire season that LSU was a fraud anyway. I didn't think that they were as good as what they were expected to be, especially after that first game against Miami. You know, I think that that was just an opening night game where LSU just came out ready to go. And Miami just wasn't, and that's what the score predicted. Now, you take a look at this Florida team, this Florida team, what has gotten them by, and I'm not saying this because I'm a Gator hater, what's gotten them by is their defense. I mean, they have a top-notch defense. They have a championship-winning defense. So when I look at them, do I see them going up against Alabama? Maybe they'll give Georgia a tough test because Georgia hasn't played their best football yet.
Right.
But do I see them competing with Alabama? I don't think so. I don't think anybody can stop Alabama right now. But to me, this is Alabama's to win. They look spectacular every week. I mean, you haven't really seen a flaw. Maybe you might have seen some flaws defensively, according to Nick Saban. But
right.
You know, but that's just Nick Saban being a perfectionist.
Right, you know, and that's what he needs to be to get this.
Exactly, to get this team amped up and ready to go, because when you look at the back end of the schedule, even though Auburn lost last night, and even though LSU went down, they are still tough teams, and those are teams that actually get ready for Alabama. So they have to worry about those two games. Alabama's going to roll through the rest of this year, but LSU and Auburn is their championship game, and a lot of teams in the SEC that are still in it, like Florida still has some games coming up where they have to put the pedal to the metal. Georgia, their championship starts this weekend coming up, so they have four straight weeks where they have LSU, Florida, Kentucky, and Auburn.
Right.
So they get it started, you know. So I mean, I still think that Alabama is—they're the team to beat. College football, period.
Mm-hmm.
But they're gonna have a tough road a little bit, but I think that they're still winning.
Right. I used to think that the SEC was just completely like the letter P, just top heavy. Mm-hmm. Until I see this Florida and LSU game and realize that, yeah, Florida just might be, you know, it kind of slapped me in the face, because I've been saying, sometimes I'm like the SEC is overrated. But then you have, you know, Florida just completely, I mean, were we shocked on what happened to LSU?
I don't think so.
I don't think I was.
Exactly.
Because, like I said, to me, LSU, I think the hype off of LSU was the Miami game. Mm-hmm. And Miami wasn't clearly ready to play that game. So, you know, that's just my whole thing.
And this could have been, you know, to a certain degree, if say, for example, if LSU would have kept pace with the rest of the top four, and say Ohio State would have lost, which can happen possibly, you know, things happen in college football. That would have made the college football Final Four completely SEC dominated.
Yes.
You know, something that we've seen, you know, in the realm of professional sports last year with the SEC or the NFL with the NFC South.
Right.
Bringing three representatives to the playoffs. Right. So, you know, with LSU losing, I mean, is it safe to say that LSU are underachievers? Because, I mean, they have all this hype surrounding them every single year. And then they just disappoint.
Well, this year, I thought especially they had big hype. And I can't discredit the Auburn victory that they had, too. But then, let's look at Auburn.
Right.
You know, is Auburn a fraud? Didn't they lose last night?
They did to Mississippi State.
Who, by the way, lost to Kentucky last week.
I mean, if you
if
you use the transitive property of college football, you would basically give yourself a giant headache this season.
Yeah, I had to stop right there. Like,
yes.
Because I can go on and on and on about what's going on. But all that does is due to the fact that Alabama is still the
heads and shoulders.
Right.
Heads and shoulders of the SEC, yet alone college football.
Because the SEC took it in the nose last night.
Each other.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's cannibalism, really.
Man, you know, there can only be one.
Exactly. It's going to be Alabama while everyone else kind of beats each other up, and that's kind of what's so great about college football, in a sense that you get this kind of continued sacrifice and carnage week in and week out. Other upsets. Well, I don't know if you consider this an upset. Do you guys consider this an upset? Texas knocks off Oklahoma 48-45. It is. Does Tom Herman have Oklahoma where he wants it? Does Tom Herman have Texas where he wants them to be?
Well, just the word. What's the word that you used last week?
Validate or verify.
There it is. Texas have been validated and verified with that W. I mean, Texas has been looking for, you know, I mean, they struggled for so long without Colt McCoy. I mean, without Vince Young, and now we're seeing without Mac Brown, who, you know, we're talking about the longtime coach. What was his tenure like? Over 30 years. Almost 25 years, a whole generation. So, you know, for them, I mean, this is like a coming of age re-emergence. And it happened in the Big 12 at that to the Big 12 powerhouse that is Oklahoma. I mean, what does it say about Oklahoma? Were they a fraud?
I don't think so. I think that this is more so about Texas than it is Oklahoma. I was one that didn't think that Oklahoma schedule. In fact, I thought West Virginia may have given them their first loss. But to be honest, Leon and John, Texas is putting teams on notice, saying that they're back.
Well, remember, I heard this on the radio, remember Texas beat Oklahoma and Charlie Strong's second year. And also now they beat Oklahoma and Tom Herman's second year. So do they need to beat Oklahoma next year for us to confirm that, or are we being lulled into a false sense of security?
Jobs now are based off of your rivals.
Okay.
Herman got the job done. And now he's got to get it done again, right?
Right.
So I don't know, man. That's a tough question. That's a real tough question. It was a great game. It was a game that anybody could have won, but Texas had it in the last few seconds, and they made more plays than Oklahoma. They made about two or three more plays, which separated a lot of teams last night.
Now Texas hosts Baylor this week, and Baylor's no slouch, 4-2, 2-1 in the conference. Is this a trap game for Texas?
It is, because of the emotional high that they were on against Oklahoma. John, it's so hard, and I've coached, so it's so hard to bring a team back down from an emotional high after winning such an emotional victory, and then you come back the next week and there's nothing, and then all the emotion is drained out. You forgot you still had the rest of the season left. Right. Mind you, this team hasn't beaten Oklahoma in 7 years, I think it's been a long
stretch for them, if I'm not mistaken. Well, again, they did beat him in Charlie Strong's second year, I think they've got one win in 10 years, something along those lines.
Yeah, and that's a big time rivalry game. If you don't win that game, just like if Michigan doesn't beat Ohio State, then our bar is gone.
Yes.
It's that simple, because he hasn't beaten him. Yeah. You have to win your rivalry.
So we're saying. So, you know, like, we're looking at this game right here with the Texas Oklahoma. Are we looking – is this a foreshadow of the Big 12 championship that's going to happen later on this year?
Still, West Virginia's still in there. West Virginia's still in there. Oklahoma still has a lot of season left. And the messed up thing is that they have to beat West Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, so, which, in my opinion, I don't think they might not even lose a game this year.
Yeah, so it's looking like.
That offense is looking at the way Will Greer is doing this time.
Because, you know, WV could easily run the table this year. It's very possible.
They're in a conference where offense is just.
Yeah. It's definitely the order of the day.
You can put them up against a basketball team and they'll outscore a basketball.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, that's where them Oklahoma, they call it a tough loss, but if they keep going, it's possible that they can beat West Virginia. But
possible.
And when I look at that loss to Auburn, that just tells me that they're not as mentally tough as we thought they were. You know, for you to lose against an unranked team like that, mm-hmm. and you being a member of the SEC, which is like, that's why I'm wondering, is the SEC truly just top heavy? Right. You know, they have all these ranked teams just simply because, we're in the SEC, but yet still, any given Saturday, you're taking a loss.
But you know what, though? Let's talk about Kentucky. Let's talk about Kentucky. It was 5-0. They had some good wins. A victory over Florida was what got them in the top 25.
And look what happened to them yesterday.
The week, Benny Snell, who was the lead rusher in the SEC, was held to a 50-something yards rushing and just did not show a good performance. But then you look at Texas A&M. A&M has had some pretty good wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And, yeah, they went to Alabama. You can't measure a team against Alabama. It's not there.
No, exactly.
You know, so they go up against A&M. They go up against A&M. It's an A&M team who, by the way, y'all know who that coach is? It's Chimbo.
Right, you know, right.
Not a bad coach. He won a national championship with us.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the SEC. You're going to continue to see this. They will beat each other.
As John said, it's like the Royal Rumble. It's cannibalism.
Cannibalism. Carnage. Exactly. Another thing I want to ask you, Daniel. Florida State did very well against Miami yesterday. And I know they were. It was heart palpitations for you. But so are you kind of heartened by what Florida State did last night?
I was impressed. But the play that turned
right.
And it was funny because they had mentioned it, the guys on ESPN had mentioned that they were talking about the turnover. So now the turnover chain is in your head now.
Exactly.
You don't do that, man. That's just like Miami talking about the backpack. They never mentioned anything about that damn backpack.
Now wait, are you talking about the announcers?
Yeah.
You're talking so basically this is your version of you don't mention a no hitter.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
You don't mention it. Well, that's what the announcers were saying, that it was said in the locker room. They were interviewing some of the players.
Okay.
They had mentioned the turnover chain. And listen, if you're the announcer, even if you're the players in the locker room, you don't worry about that turnover chain. You don't ever want to see it. It shouldn't even come out your mouth. That turnover chain came out the first time. That's where I knew that this game had turned around.
Okay.
And everything had shifted over. We had an incredible first half, a punt return by Williams, who had been looking for that spark. I thought that was going to end the game, but it didn't, and it just proves that what we said all year, if Miami don't turn the ball over, they don't win the game.
Right.
And they did. They were able to turn us over and create momentum for everybody else, for their offense. And then Kosi Perry, I thought he played well. We just couldn't get it done, and then at the end of the day, we couldn't make a stop. But I'm impressed. Do I think we have a shot against Clemson? Yes, I do.
For how long?
Until if they lose to Wake Forest next week, then I'll be singing.
Clemson beat Wake Forest. Clemson.
No. If we lose.
Oh, you lose to Wake Forest. I'm looking at the. I've got the AC schedule for next week up.
Oh, and we're off.
That's what I. Okay,
yeah,
so.
We're off, and I think it's the following week. All right. Play Wake Forest, if
I'm not mistaken. Well, let me just double check. Yeah, because Clemson hosts NC State. Yeah, you're right. You host Wake Forest.
Yeah, we host Wake Forest, and then I think we go to Clemson. All right. The following.
Yeah.
So, which will be a tough one.
Right.
Actually, you're half right. Clemson comes to Doak.
Yeah.
Right.
So, which is a good one. That gives us at least some sort of an advantage.
Right.
Right.
Speaking of taking it on the chin, Stanford just getting pounded on. Wow. Man, unranked Utah at that. Now, Utah put up 40 on them.
Well, remember, at the beginning of the year, I had Utah winning the Pac-12
You did.
And that could very well happen.
So I'm really not surprised by it. I think that because of the fact that Notre Dame, we need to talk about it in a minute, the fact that Notre Dame put it on Stanford that following last weekend, last Saturday night,
it showed me
something. It showed me two things. Number one, Notre Dame's for real. And number two, Stanford.
Well, Stanford's defense let them down against Utah. They put up 21 points, but they allowed Zach Moss to go for two touchdowns and 160 yards. No. Maybe.
Either or, they weren't present.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it was.
That looks real bad. Are we looking at, we speaking of Notre Dame, they have Pittsburgh. They could very well run the table. Looking at, they got Pittsburgh coming up on the 13th. They got Navy, that's the WW. You know, but then they got your boys coming on November 10th.
I didn't realize.
Oh, man.
And that's at Notre Dame at night. That's a football team at night.
That's going to be very interesting to play at Notre Dame at night because I guess NBC is going to push that game tonight and really try to clean up against the SEC night game, whatever that's going to wind up being.
I'm going to tell you something about Notre Dame that we haven't mentioned. Kudos to Brian Kelly. Mm. He makes that quarterback change.
Right.
Brandon Wimbush, the end book. And that team is rolling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I give him all the kudos. He probably, we talk about Clemson and Alabama and Georgia. They're fine with their situation, but I don't know about Clemson. You know, that's Kelly Bryant situation. I'm not sure. Alabama is set on Tua Tagovailoa, and Georgia set on the two quarterbacks.
Right.
You still see Justin Fields. But to pull Brandon Wimbush and to put Book in there, and I think Wimbush was actually hurt, so he actually lost his job for being hurt or something like that. But kudos to Brian Kelly for making that move and sticking with that move. Because I think if he goes back to Wimbush, I don't think that will be the most popular decision in Notre Dame at South Bend.
Well, like I said, if you make a quarterback change and you get it right, you're a hero. If you make it and you get it wrong, you're on the next train out of town.
Absolutely.
And we all know Brian Kelly. A lot of people would say that Kelly's seat was a bit high coming into the season, too.
Yeah, he got 2 7 graces there. Quarterback change and the fact that he got Dexter Williams.
Yeah.
Mr. 3-touchdown, 97-yarder.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of Georgia, are we going to see a possibly Kelly Bryant situation next year because they're giving the young man all the reps that he needs to get. They're giving him the reps. Yeah. All right. And he's looking good while doing it. So next year during his sophomore year, will he remain humble and patient? Or will he push to start and push Strom up out of town to another school?
I don't know. I think it's going to be a matter of what he thinks is a draft, of what Jake Fromm thinks his draft situation is going to be. I think if Justin Fields kind of comes in, and he's going to have to sit down with Kirby and find out, you know, what his role is going to be going forward. Because I don't think there really is a plan right now in terms of how they're going to use Justin Fields. And that might be deliberate.
Right. And we don't know about, can Justin Fields throw 15, 20 times in a game? You know, can he be a consistent quarterback in a football game? We don't know that. In a college football game, we know what he can do. So what he did in high school, that's fine. This is college football. I'm talking about here. You're the SEC.
Yeah.
You know, so we understand his athleticism. I think he's an outstanding talent. it's Georgia. Like, I think that's where this whole thing would possibly lead to. And we're really not going to find out until this weekend, until we really know who Georgia really is. Are they going to stick the prom line? Kirby Smart, what he's doing is he's pulling the hot hand over something. He pulls the cold hand and put the hot hand back in, you know, or put the hand is ready to go.
Right.
Like, when Fromm probably missed his last three, or messed up his last three plays, then he'll go to Fields. He'll let Fields run. But I'm telling you, man, Fields is in that game. He is a spark.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's a spark. Are we creating another? Is Jake Fromm going to be the next Kelly Bryant next year? I mean,
that's
the question. I don't. Well,
that's a tough thing to say at this point in time.
Well, you can't cookie cutter them because they're two different quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, when I mean two different quarterbacks, I mean just Jake Fromm and Justin Fields are different quarterbacks than Trevor Lawrence and Kelly Bryant.
Exactly.
That's what I. So it's, and Clemson's a different program than Georgia. Their needs are different. It's going to be really hard to. It's going to be really hard to tell going into the offseason.
So what do you say, John?
Next week, what at LSU.
I'm saying they'll go with. I mean,
validate or verify.
Like I said, I don't know. LSU is going to be hurting, and that game is going to be in LSU. I think Florida got a bit of a bump from it being at the Swamp, and LSU is going to get a similar bump being in Death Valley, and Georgia has not faced a team like LSU all season. They haven't. I mean, Kirby could pretty much do whatever he wanted to. The caliber they've played this season hasn't been up to snuff. Even South Carolina hasn't been up to snuff.
Right, and remember that was the game that everybody was saying is going to be a tough game for Georgia going at South Carolina, because we know what they're capable of playing against Georgia at home. So,
do we believe that Georgia will be undefeated by November 17th?
That's the Arbor. That's the cupcake game, right?
Yes, that's after.
After the stretch of eight straight SEC teams. Yeah, because they play UMass and Tech as kind of a breather.
Right now, I would say yes.
Yeah, I have to go with you. I have to go with that too, because I think Kentucky got exposed last week, and.
They got exposed. Florida Bennett got exposed by Kentucky, okay? And LSU and Auburn, they exposed each other. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a bloodbath. Yeah, that's the thing about being SEC, you know, for real. Like, it's like, teams are ranked, tensions are high, jobs on the line.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just an ad for a kind of an ex-lax thing to settle your stomach, and because Sunday you just need that day off to make sure everything's working right, because boy, it's just enough to give someone an ulcer. It really is. And you know, being invested in these clubs, it makes it even harder, and especially when you got especially with that Georgia LSU game next week, that's going to be the huge contest. But and you were talking about the Pac-12. One other point I want to make about that: next week you got Washington and Oregon, and that's gonna tell a lot about what we see there, because Washington still undefeated, and looking through the SEC next week, there's really, outside Georgia LSU, there's really not that much. Texas A&M and South Carolina could be interesting, judging by what we've seen. You know, can Texas A&M keep it going on the road? Tennessee's at Auburn. Will Tennessee's winless streak continue? And since it's at Auburn, I have to say yes. How many points is Florida going to hang on Vanderbilt? Because that.
Florida's offense, Felipe Franks is fine. He's starting to get a little better, but that offense is still based off of trick play.
Okay.
So I think Vandy will keep it close, but I think Florida's defense might make it good.
Okay. So that's what we're doing with college football, pro football. Oh, boy, guys. I know. The defense of the Atlanta Falcons continuing to disappoint. Now, Tack McKinley exited the game against the Steelers with cramps, not what we might have heard on some beat writer social media accounts. The Steelers put 40 on. Falcons can only muster 17. I mean, are we just ready to throw in the towel? And I know we say this every week, but the Falcons just are not, and this is just my opinion, they're not giving us any type of confidence going forward.
Yeah, I agree. John, if they're not ready to
think I'm about done. Not jumping off the Falcons train or whatever. I'm a Falcons fan.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes you have to be a realist and just know the loser of this game, whether it be even if it was Pittsburgh, I think the loser of this game is going to be in serious trouble.
Right.
Would have had to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just probably thinking about it. I think we're too far down in the season as this rolls on, and I think that sadly it's Atlanta because and it's because of so many reasons we can touch on, man. One, when you lose Deion Jones, Ricardo Allen, a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people say, why second string step up to another?
Well, there's.
Do you realize what you're asking?
There's a reason why they're second string.
Exactly. First off, you're asking someone to come in and replace three All Pros. Now, I'm sorry, Ricardo Allen. I'm not sure if he's All Pro yet, but
he's definitely a quality starter.
Yes.
Quality starter. If Keanu Neal, Deion Jones is considered one of the top middle linebackers in the league. If not, I've heard some people say the top linebacker in the National Football League right now. My thing is this, you can't have somebody just step in and become an All-Pro player just like that. You know, that takes time. And then with so many injuries, Grady Jarrett is missing today. He'll be missing probably for the next 4 to 6 months with that high ankle sprain. Alford played a little better today, but he was up against Antonio Brown.
Right.
You know, I saw some good looks from Isaiah Holland, but it's...
Yeah, well, they had Isaiah Oliver on Antonio Brown. That's when they gave up the touchdown.
And then, of course, they gave up a defensive touchdown as well. Fumble recovery. And today was like a bad day in the offense because, of course, you expect for Atlanta to score 35, 40 points, but it just didn't happen that way. Matt Ryan was not able to put the ball in the money like you see him. Julio Jones didn't make a catch until the fourth quarter. If I'm not mistaken, he ended up having 3 receptions in the game. So, it's tough. It's tough. It is tough. It is really tough to watch. They've got Tampa Bay next week.
Right here.
And then they've got the Giants on Monday night here.
Due to the lack of defense at the Falcons, unfortunately, are going through right now. I was like, the offense has to bring the shotgun shells every game.
Yes.
You got to be wearing a hang. Man.
And you're going to have, and I think maybe the Falcons should, if they win the coin toss, stop deferring. Get that ball first. So you try to get 7-0.
You have no choice now.
Yeah.
You know, your offense has to score at every time because it's a breath of fresh air when we get a stop.
I know, it is.
You know, so we're ranked 31st in the league in total points allowed, we're 28th in the league in total defense. And this is from a defense that was ranked 10th last year.
Yeah, right.
They got a brain. So the question is, will the front office be so understanding when it comes to contract renegotiations, to how they're evaluating the coach?
I think they will.
Like I said, Matt Ryan, 26 of 38, 285 with a touchdown. He threw one to Sanu. Ito Smith with a touchdown. Austin Hooper had 9 receptions. Julio had 5. We said this last week, and it's kind of the same story. You can't blame Ryan. You can blame the offense a little bit today, but 17 points, you should be in it, not routed out of Heinz Field.
It was 13-10 at halftime.
Right.
And Roethlisberger had made a huge mistake. It could have been 20-10 at halftime. But Mark Roethlisberger made a huge mistake throwing the ball in the end zone. Demonte KZ came up with an interception, who I think is just a tremendous ball player. You know, when he stays in when he's in game, he's a tremendous ball player. So,
absolutely.
I don't believe in Oaksy or anything like that. The Super Bowl jinx is something else, man.
It is.
Never has it in history.
And I don't think it's going to happen this year. And another thing, you mentioned the thing about the defense, they had no sacks today.
The lead tackler was DeAndre Campbell. So, this was tough, man. And kudos to James Conner. He continues to impress me each and every year. So, you know, and it's just to prove
just to show that, listen, Le'Veon Bell, I hear you coming back in 7, but that spot that you have might not be promising, because Connor is really showing up.
Yes, sir. Well, the shift of focus to the West Coast, you know. What, I mean, I would touch on my guy first with Phillip Rivers eclipsing 1,000 yards today, but I don't think that would be fair.
Okay.
We have a re-emerging powerhouse going on right now in the Midwest with a second-year quarterback by the name of Patrick Mahomes, who is really leaving jaws dropping right now. I mean, you're talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars. This team leads the league in points allowed. I mean, they are stingy. And Patrick hung 30 on them with the help of the defense, of course.
Yes.
But the game was over by the second quarter. I know this is any given Sunday. This is NFL and everything that comes along with that. But it's safe to say that the game was over by the second quarter. This man threw an interception that did not hurt him.
Right.
I mean.
Which was his first of the year, I think. Well, no, I think he threw his first last
year. No, I think that was his first of the year.
Yeah, okay.
Well, he had 2 picks today. Still threw for 313 yards, no scores. Kareem Hunt, though, had a touchdown for him. And looking through, yeah, and Mahomes had one himself.
Are the Chiefs better than the Patriots?
Now they are, yes.
Well, are we seeing a possible changing of the guard in the AFC?
Well, let's hold the break for a minute. Because we've seen this from Kansas City before. I don't care what. We've seen it from the Dante Hall days, right? To the Alex Smith thing. So we've seen it. It's when they get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's when they're one and done. You can give them a first round bye and they're still looking at the division. You know, we'll just have to see with this team. I just don't know yet. I just don't know. Listen, regular season, I'm loving what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, in the postseason, they're still in Kansas City.
Exactly. They're kind of like the Bengals. You know they're going to get in, but they're going to. Are they going to? Yeah. Are they going to break your heart again?
I know. And it's a little old saying: you take the eye out of Chiefs, you get the chef that can't cook.
that great commercial for what was it? Snickers. About 10 years ago. Great googly moogly. But who are the chefs?
Oh man.
I don't know what was funnier, that the who are the chefs or the great googly moogly. I think that might have been the funniest part of that.
I remember some years ago when we were playing against the Chiefs, and I don't know if the Chargers were playing against the Chiefs. I don't know if it was done on purpose, but in the end zone that was supposed to have the Chiefs logo on it, the eye was taken out.
Yeah,
they put the chefs. We got it done. Absolutely, and we did exactly what we were supposed to do. We hung over 25 points on them, and we walked away with the W, and we're going into Cleveland. Hopefully, we do the same thing. I want Phillip Rivers to walk in and put the Johnson, carry some Johnson's baby powder with him, and just smack the brakes and mufflers off the Browns next week. Do it for me. You know what I'm saying? Because they got away with one today.
Yes.
Graham Gano for the Carolina Panthers. You're down 31-30. This is how I know, and this ain't got nothing to do with the Falcons, but it has to do with your division. This is how I knew. This man lines up for a 63-yard field goal and nails it. And I mean, and he had room to spare.
Absolutely.
He could have hit it from 70 if he wanted to. 63-yard second most field goal hit in NFL history, by the way. 63 yards. Giants beat Panthers beat the Giants
33-31. And he split the uprights. What a time to do it.
Yeah. 33-31. And it looked like that the Panthers had called a ridiculous play. They called a third down conversion. It's a run out of the middle of Chris McCaffrey and the timeout in 25 seconds. So now I'm like, okay, this guy might be interested. But I should know because he went to
State. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And then I had to think about it. So I said, might hit this, lines up, he just nails it. And now Carolina's 3.
That's what I'm saying. What does that say of the consistency of the Carolina Panthers since Cam Newton has been at the helm? His QBRs aren't high. It's done real ugly. But it's done.
He gets it done at the end of the day. That's all you want.
Yeah. Yeah. And the defense this year has been a bit lackluster. They haven't been that Carolina defense that we know to see. I think Thomas Davis came back this week. So, I don't know. Their worst game of the year was against Atlanta. And it proved, and I think it's all around. But I don't know, man. I got to tell you this, though. Carolina was like what we looked like. That last year, when we started off like 3-0, and we were winning games by the grin of our teeth, like Chicago opening day.
Right.
And we won that game by a yard.
And you knew it was just going to come back. You knew everything was going to come. Everything was going to come back.
Yeah. But that's what Carolina kind of looks that way. Except they're on the other side and they're getting the ball first. You know, they get the ball with some 5 seconds to go and they're able to drive, or they are able to make a stop on defense. So Carolina, are they a questionable 3-1? Yeah, you can say that. I don't think they're the best team in the division. I refuse to say the best
thing. I got a question. We're going to shift the focus to the Midwest. Are the Packers going to miss the playoffs this year?
If they get in, they're going to have to be a wild card. I think the Bears are going to win. I think the Bears are going to win the division easily. And looking over things as they stand, again, it's still very early. Everyone's kind of bunched together. The one thing about the Packers, though, they've gotten the first leg of their division games out of the way.
Yeah.
They've already played the Bears once. They played the Vikings. They played the Lions once. So now they're going everywhere. They're going everywhere else, for lack of.
They're 1-1-1 in those games.
Exactly.
Those games,
Well, good thing for the Packers is in the short term the schedule helps them. They host San Francisco next week and then the bye. So they'll probably be 3-2-1 heading into the bye, but coming out of the bye, two really tough road games at the Rams and at New England.
Yeah. Two L's.
And I don't see them winning those games.
No, they're not.
And I say that about New England because here comes the win. Just when people were worried about them, here comes those doggone Patriots. You know, when do we get a chance to count out Tom Brady?
Well,
he retires.
Well, it'll be actually, you know what? We'll be next week. They host the Chiefs. They host the Chiefs on Sunday night. So that's going to be a great game. And I'll tell you what, looking down the road, November 19th, Monday night, they play the Rams. The only problem with that, it's in Mexico City. And the Rams just defeated the Seahawks to stay undefeated, 33-31. I think the Seahawks gave them a closer fight than maybe they were expecting.
It's the first time. They got tested a little bit as the Chargers last week. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that they really got tested.
Yes.
They had to go at home, the 12th man in Seattle. I don't care what Seattle's team looks like. You never want to go and visit that 12th man.
Okay? Right.
But this really tested their gangster. I'm going to tell you something, man. The L.A. Rams.
All right, for real.
Man, I said it last week. Your greatest teacher is failure.
Yes.
Failure is your greatest teacher.
And that embarrassing loss that they took last year from your team that traveled 3,000 miles to their house.
To their house.
In January.
But I was so confident about that game last year. I said, man, you know what? We're going to beat them. Because they're young.
I think a lot of people. I don't think there's any experts who picked the Rams in that ball game.
Okay, guys, I just saw a final. The Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions, are 2-3.
It's getting ugly.
They just lost to Minnesota, so Minnesota got their revenge back. What's the verdict on the Eagles? What do you guys think?
I think it's been a change in the guard in the NFC. I mean, I know I don't want to become a prisoner in the moment, but look at the first four games in the NFC of the season, and it seemed like the Rams might be the team to beat right now in the NFC. I mean,
no, absolutely.
The Eagles are looking, you know, like they've come back down to earth.
So let me ask.
Carson Wentz, who we thought he was.
And let me ask you this: so who do you take in the NFC East? Do you think is it going to be Dallas by default?
Dallas don't have any wide receivers, though.
Man.
You know.
I think it will be. Yeah, I think it will be.
The winner will be 9-7.
Because the Giants aren't showing me anything at all. The Redskins are the Redskins.
The Giants had a chance. To really make this thing interesting.
When your wide receiver threw the longest touchdown of the year, I don't like the chances.
Well, they got a good core. They got a good core with Saquon Barkley. They got that player that they can rebuild. They can rebuild around, but they're going to have to draft in the next draft. They're going to have to draft their future quarterback.
Yeah, they are.
And I think they know. And I think they know that now. I think they realize that we went one extra year with Eli that we shouldn't have.
We shouldn't have. And that's my whole thing with that. Dallas is starting to make a little run here. We'll see what they do tonight against the Texans. I actually think the Texans will win this game. I think Deshaun Watson is going to make a couple of plays. It's going to be close, but I think Watson makes a couple of plays. And the Redskins have a tough challenge against New Orleans in New Orleans tomorrow night. But I think the Redskins can actually take that game. If they win that game, I think that they would be my team.
The problem with Washington is they get their bye way too early.
Yeah.
They had it last week
with Carolina. Right.
Right. Yeah. That's my only hang up with Washington. And let me ask you this, Leon: does Dallas? Because I'm hearing reports that Dez Bryant wants to come back to Dallas. That's where he wants to go. Does Dallas make that phone call?
It seems that they're going. If they don't see any type of real production out of their wide receiving core this game,
mm-hmm.
which is a very important one, by the way. I mean, if not for, you know, just overall importance of the record, but just for sentimental reasons, the fact who's the best team in Texas, you're going to have to make that call. But it's like, will it really amount to anything? Because, you know, they got rid of Dez Bryant for a reason. He just wasn't that productive.
And he was making too much.
Right. So, you know, is Dez going to take that? You know, that's one of the reasons why Dez is not. That's one of the reasons why the fact that they're even able to call Dez Bryant.
Right.
Because then all, like, you know, to be honest with you, Dez Bryant should not be available right now. He should have been scooped up immediately. But he insists that he's a home run hitter still. He insists on not wanting to take a pay cut. So, and, you know, he's showing too much loyalty to Dallas, too. That's the one, you know, he just wants to play for Dallas. I mean, you know, I can understand. I get it. You know, you have something to prove and everything like that. But if you're going to have, they should have called him last week. To be honest with you, they should have been.
You can't expect Ezekiel Elliott to make big plays like that. You did to win the game last week. You can't expect them to do that every Sunday morning, afternoon, evening, or even Monday night, or even Thursday night.
Your running back should not be a best wide receiver.
No, he shouldn't.
Just like the Giants.
Ezekiel Elliott has been a screen kind of
guy. He's not even known for having hands. Just like the Giants, the longest pass of the season should not be made by a wide receiver. It should be caught by the wide receiver.
Exactly.
Giants in trouble.
Giants aren't. Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of funny. I think Fritz Schirmer is trying to just get to the end of the season so he can draft his son as the quarterback. I think that's what's going to happen here. Let's switch gears. We can always get back to this. We are recording in the Smyrna Vikings area, starting in about an hour from when we are right now, maybe 2 miles, a mile down the road. The Atlanta Braves are fighting for their playoff life. They are down 0-2 to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Guys, when this podcast airs on Tuesday, will the Braves still be part of the National League playoff picture?
We find out. Well, the first two games tell me hell no, because they've been outscored, I believe it's 13-0.
They have only scored more than one run in one game in the last seven. That's stretching back to the regular season. They have gone downhill at the worst possible time.
Maybe it's just like in reference. This is what happens with a young team. Okay, this is what happens sometimes with a team that is just too far, who was actually way ahead of schedule, like the Atlanta Braves are. I think the Atlanta Braves were ahead of schedule this year. They got in. The Phillies had a run. They had a good run, but they faltered at the end. The Nationals were supposed to be the team that was supposed to win this division in the next 2 to 3 years until Bryce Harper left. Then they were supposed to take over, but they imploded.
Yeah, they imploded. And now Bryce Harper is probably gone this season. And that's going to do it for the Nationals window.
Exactly. The Marlins, they're in rebuilding stage.
The Marlins are in perpetual rebuilding stage. And then the Mets.
The Mets.
Exactly. So like we said earlier, it's going to be the Braves and Phillies by default.
Yeah, by default, and Atlanta just happened to win. Listen, you can't expect for your pitching to get you somewhere if you can't hit. I know that Kershaw is Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
He went 8 innings, and I saw his picture. He was spectacular. I don't think nobody could have hit this stuff either.
Which is quite surprising for Clayton, because, you know, he's known for, he'll have a great regular season on you.
There's something that tells me that tonight, when this podcast airs, they'll still be alive. It's something that tells me that, in fact, it's something that tells me, and I'm going to go bold here, folks. It's something that tells me that something, that I hope somebody in that locker room or something has woken this team up, and I think that this series goes 5 games.
You can't lose both your home games, man.
Yeah,
no.
I think this series goes 5 games. I think Atlanta finds a way. They are hitting too well for them to not be hitting the ball like they're manufacturing runs. You know, I think that this series goes 5 games, depending on who's pitching, would determine who wins game 5.
Because they're bringing Clayton in, the Dodgers will bring Clayton next game.
Clayton Kershaw will pitch game 5. You're going to have Walker Buehler go tonight for the Dodgers against Sean Newcomb. And Newcomb, he's also faltered. I mean, the first game, Foltynewicz didn't make it to the fourth.
Yeah.
And they got to have a strong outing, because no one trusts their bullpen.
Nope.
And so you got to have a strong, if they get to him early, and pretty much Brian Snicker has said all hands are on deck tonight. Everyone's going to be used, which, of course, if they have to do that and somehow get out of victory, then that puts them in trouble for tomorrow. But we'll deal with tomorrow. Let's make sure there is a tomorrow first.
And here's my thing, too. When do you call on Julio Teheran, who is your most seasoned, who is the veteran of that pitching staff, who's been with that staff longer than anybody, would this be a bit of a slap in the face to him that he hasn't been called into the rotation for the first at least 3 games?
I mean, it's the writing on the wall, though.
Well, I think we know that he's out of there. I think he knows that he's gone anyway. And you look at what else is going on. Milwaukee's got a 2-0 lead on Colorado, shut out the Rocks 6-0.
Whooped off on them
a little earlier today.
Oh, that series is over.
Yeah, that series is over.
Yeah. National League. I got a chance to see them in games 1 and 2.
Okay.
And listen, whether it's the Dodgers or the Braves, man, you better watch yourselves if you're anybody going up against that Brooklyn team. This team might go to the World Series.
Now, who's this man right here in Houston called Jared Cole? And this man would often.
It's a nice revelation for the Stros. They got a 2-0 lead on Cleveland. They'll probably neither knock them out tomorrow or Wednesday, and of course the Red Sox and the Yankees. I think there's no way that series doesn't go 5.
Yeah,
that series is obviously going 5.
If it goes less than that, then I don't know.
Right.
So with this nuclear weapon that the Stros are holding on to,
Can Gerrit Cole's performance translate into a deep playoff run for Houston, though?
Again?
Absolutely. I'm thinking.
Yes. This is the team that you didn't want to see in the playoffs because you knew they would get it together. Remember, they faltered like in between the All-Star break. They had a tough time. They were the best team in baseball from April to May, and then from like June or July, they kind of dropped off, and then they picked it back up.
At the right time.
Yeah, but they had like a 17-game lead. They had a stronghold lead in the division and all of a sudden almost lost it to Oakland, you know, and then they picked it back up. But you have to remember what else they also have. Not only do they have that, they have Verlander, who's pitching like he's 20 all over again.
Right.
You know, he's pitching very well. But then you also have that three-headed monster that's batting in your lineup. You have Bregman, Altuve, and Correa.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys. So you have them coming up, and they're just playing incredible baseball right now.
Yeah, I think Houston does have the bats, certainly, to contend. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see when they – who they play on the other side. Will it be Boston? Will it be New York? Boston does have some good arms as well, but, well, David Price just doesn't seem to be able to get it done in the postseason. He got knocked around yesterday, picked up the loss in Fenway. Now that series switches to the Bronx for two games, and I think Boston's going to have to they will split, but I think Boston's got to win tomorrow.
I think that I think that you should hold Sales until game five. You know, if there's a game five, you hold him there. I don't think you win game three. But you have to win game three, though. Sales is your best pitcher.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? He got great stuff, man. So, I don't know. This is a must-win for both teams if they don't want to have to play their ace pitchers.
Yeah, so it's still going to be some exciting times going on in October baseball. That's why we listen. That's why we watch. That's pretty much why we do anything. Well, guys, let's talk a little bit about the NBA. We're going through some exhibition matchups right now. The Hawks, 113-94 losers to the Thunder in OKC. They are now 1-2. They won their home game, but, however, lost the two road games that they have participated in. Have you seen anything about the Hawks in this early going that you like, that you don't like, that's concerning you?
I think Trae Young is going to be pretty good. You know, to be honest with you, John, I don't expect too much of anything out of the Hawks this year.
Mm-hmm.
I expect them to make the playoffs?
I think they should too.
Ron left.
Yeah.
It kind of make a seismic shift because it's not promised that Cleveland's going to make the playoffs.
Right.
I'm about to ask you, who's going to have a better year this year between the Cleveland and the Hawks? Because Cleveland became the Hawks overnight.
Right.
But that now all rides on Kevin Love.
Because he's right back in Minnesota all over again.
All over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he's got a better team than he did in Minnesota. I can honestly say that because remember, Carl Anthony Towns was there at that time. So he's got a better team now with J.R. Smith and whoever else he had.
Will they go 2-80?
No. You know what? The Hawks and the Cavs are probably the same, and I think they'll finish probably around the same. They'll probably fight for a 6 or a 7, something like that. The East is wide open at the bottom now.
The East is really a problem right now. I mean, if you look at the... Now that LeBron left, it's like, okay, in the Eastern Conference, we got Boston, got Philly, we got Toronto, we got Milwaukee,
right.
We got Indiana.
You've been saying Indiana.
Yeah, they gave the Cleveland, they gave Cleveland all they could handle last year.
They did.
You know, and then, you know, we got Washington with the new acquisition of Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
Miami's going to be there. So really, it's really only one spot available in that AFC, and there might be a team I didn't mention that could possibly contend for something. But you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be if Cleveland can somehow make it to the AFC or whatnot. But
The East is actually looking pretty good. They're looking good.
Looking over the stats from that game against the Thunder, Trae Young, 16 points, 2 of 5 shooting from deep, 40%. I think we can live with that percentage. Leading scorer, however, at one, Alex Len, had 18 points in 16 minutes as a starter. Taryon Prince with 13. I mean, again, this is preseason. You can't really read that much into it. By the way, Kent Bazemore with 9. Hawks in this game shoot 38%. But they allow the Thunder to shoot 41%. I know this. They open. I want to say, New York. They open with New York. They have a 2-game road trip. I think they open with the Knicks and then travel to Memphis.
Okay, I thought it was Memphis and then New York. I don't remember who it was. I knew Memphis was in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of the Eastern Conference, there was a trade looming over the horizon that allegedly, and I say allegedly because, you know, sometimes people send mixed signals to the media, but it was rumblings that Jimmy Butler was to be traded to the Miami Heat.
Well, Jimmy Butler wants out, I think. Doesn't he? I mean,
absolutely, he wants out.
He wants out, and he doesn't. I don't think he cares where he wants to go. He just wants out.
Nobody's saying anything about what's going on within the offense in that locker room. You know, we don't know where the disconnect between him, if there was any, between him and Tom Thibodeau. Him and Thibodeau, they were boys, man. They were boys at one point in time. So I don't know, man. I don't know where that could have came from. I've heard rumors beyond that. He wanted to play the Clippers and Clippers for Kawhi Leonard to join. See, I've heard so many rumors go on.
That could possibly happen, but it all depends on what Toronto does this year. If Toronto makes a very deep playoff run, which is very possible, you know, then Kawhi might stay there. Who knows? But with Jimmy Butler, you know, we're talking about Minnesota, who has one of the most stacked teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Jeff T. quarterbacking. You have Anthony Wiggins, who's making $137 million. Got his first taste of playoff basketball last year, which he didn't really make a huge splash like we thought he was.
Right.
But, you know, you have Mr. Jimmy Butler, you have Cat, who got his first taste of playoff basketball, and unfortunately got Clint Capella paid because of that egg that he laid last year. So that, I think, you know, that just left a bad taste in Jimmy Butler's mouth. He says, you know, it's been alleged that he questions the heart of Karl-Anthony Towns, and he questions if Andrew Wiggins is actually concerned more with winning over his stats.
Yeah. Well, we are coming close to the end of our podcast, so once again, we'll leave it up to our hosts to talk about anything that has piqued their interest in the last 7 days. And Leon, you go first.
Well, you know, I'm going to go back. I'm going to be extremely biased, and I'm going to talk about my team, the Lakers.
Okay.
I was going to focus on the Chargers, but I'm going to talk about the Lakers. Oh, yeah. You know, with our addition of LeBron James and this young man, we're already going to give him a nickname already. B.I. You got KD,
mm-hmm.
and we got B.I. You know what I mean? This young man is like pretty much what KD said is like looking in the mirror. And I looked at when I look at B.I. and I look at his stat line with 9 points rookie season, his improving to 15 to his sophomore season, then with us coming with LeBron James, I look for Brandon Ingram to be putting up at least 20 points and 10 rebounds this year. He will be our version of KD. Hopefully at the Lakers manager and seniors, and we resign him. I look for this man to do. I mean, I was even though it was against the Kings. But I'm taking the victories when I can get them at with the Lakers right now. You know, this young man dropped 30. I'm loving every minute of it. So, you know, and then we have all the other youngsters. But I'm looking for B.I. to make this emergence right now as the challenger of Kevin Durant in the whole NBA. I mean, we have a lot of long and lanky small forwards out here, or we're small forward-like skills, and I'm looking for him to make, you know, his appearance in the top 10 along. When we talk about Brandon Ingram,
I wanted him to be mentioned the same in the same sentence as the Giannis.
Okay.
As Joel Embiid, as the KDs. You know, we need that. And that right there, because I'm not, you know, they're talking about LeBron James wants to play with KD for what? No, I don't want KD with the Lakers. I don't want that guy with the Lakers, man. He can stay up there. I want to beat that guy. I want to beat Steph Curry. I want to beat Klay Thompson. I want the Lakers to be the team to offset the inorganic juggernaut that exists as the Golden State Warriors. And I'm saying inorganic because that addition of KD and DeMarcus Cousins was just the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
So I wanted to. I want BI, and I want LBJ, and I want my Lake Show to be the ones to put the seasoning on that, and just, you know, just destroy those guys. You know what I mean? That's just me being biased. You know, other than that, as you know who I am, you know, I want to be impartial and unprejudiced with that. But you know, I generally just have a problem with Golden State, and I said it publicly. Right, you know, right. See, we're human.
Right, Daniel, you're up.
No problem. I had to let that out.
You know what? Today I was going to talk about Earl Thomas and him throwing the middle finger up, but I'm not going to do that. Okay, you'll save that for another time. I want to talk about something that happened last night. I don't know. You know, it was a big fight that came on last night from the UFC. Khabib, the Eagle, Nurmagomedov, and I think I pronounced that correctly. I'm not sure. He fought Conor McGregor in UFC 229 last night, defeated him by a rear naked choke. But it was something that led to it. It was something that happened before the fight, and something that happened after the fight. Before the fight, there were comments that Conor McGregor had made about the Eagles' father, his religion, and his country. Okay, he's from Russia. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what his religion is, but he's from Russia, and I'm not sure what Conor McGregor said about his father. Okay, but we all know how Conor McGregor is. At the end of that fight, the Eagle gets up and he kind of taunts Conor McGregor, but then he jumps over the gate and goes after McGregor's camp. I think we're getting out of hand with promotion. Okay, promoting fights is not like quite like Ali used to be. We knew what Ali used to be, right?
Yeah.
Ali, he did kind of get under your skin, but he didn't say too much of anything that, you know, that didn't harm you. When have we got to a point where it is cool to talk about each other's family, its beliefs, and whatever it is, just to sell a fight for them? And I think that Conor McGregor and anybody else who's listening to this, it is okay for me to say, oh, you're not a better quarterback, or you're not a better whatever than me.
Mm-hmm.
You keep that in the realm of sports. You keep that in the realm of competition. No way should you have to step out and talk. I should never have to step out. If you guys ever go off and get you another podcast, I should never have to step off and say, oh, John's girlfriend is da 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 da. I shouldn't have to mention that. You know, you stay in the realm of your podcast, or you stay in the realm of your sport, or you stay in the realm of whatever the hell you're doing. But that ass whooping we got, excuse my French, but that whooping that you got, Conor McGregor, it was well deserved. But Eagle, I understand that your emotions got heavy, but it's okay. It's all right. And he's probably going to get reprimanded for it. We'll see what Dana White says.
I got a question. Is it safe to say that Conor McGregor is still the face of the UFC, despite these L's he's taking?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, you know these billboards, the LED billboards, they have a bunch of different messages. They rotate through them. Well, if you drive down 75, 85, going right through the Georgia Tech corridor, on the left side is one of them. It's right on the opposite side about where Grant Field. And one of the messages that's been rotating through, it started a few days ago, has been for advertising tickets for Georgia State men's basketball. And the message on the billboard is, the best team in Georgia. And they have this billboard right outside of Georgia Tech. Trying to, I don't know if trolling is the right word, I don't know if they meant to do this, but here's my thing. If you really want to do that, I wouldn't put that billboard in Georgia Tech. I'd put it into Athens.
Yeah.
That's where I would put the billboard, right there in Athens. If you're going to troll for the best team in Georgia, don't put it there. Put it in Athens. Although I can understand why it's there, because I don't think Georgia State is really going after the Athens market. Athens isn't going to drive an hour on 316 to 75 to go to the sports arena, so I can see that. But if I'm Georgia State, I would like to put some sort of tiny message in Athens saying, no, you may think it's your state in every other sport, but in men's basketball, it's our state, because we've been to the postseason and we are odds-on favorite to make it again this season. All right, that's going to wrap us up. We're going to have our NBA preview episode next week. We hope to have a special guest. We're currently knocking down the details for that, so you're going to want to tune in for that. And thank you again for joining us. Tell a friend, tell an enemy. We really don't care. We're not that particular. If you've got any questions, hit us up either at John_Morgo on Twitter or leave us a message on SoundCloud. We'll be sure to answer all of your messages and postings. So for
Leon Brown
and Daniel Bowden,
I'm John Morgo. Thank you again for joining us. This has been a presentation of The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. We'll see you in 7 days with our next episode. So until then, have a good night.